School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Kenya has long been one of the richest and most developed countries in Africa. The capital, Nairobi, is a hub for businesses all over the continent, and its game parks and beaches have been a magnet for tourists. But Kenya also has a really big problem: corruption. Paying something small to policemen and local officials is a feature of daily life for many Kenyans. When Kenya's current president, Uhuru Kenyatta, visited Israel last year, he told an audience that his countrymen had become, quote, experts at stealing and abusing each other. That came shortly after the Chief Justice of Kenya's Supreme Court publicly lamented that Kenya had become a, quote, bandit economy. Meanwhile, the head of the country's Anti-Corruption Commission recently estimated that one-third of Kenya's government budget is lost to corruption each year. The situation has led to widespread discontent with the country's leaders and is fueling tension ahead of a presidential election scheduled for August. Now, in that poll, Uhuru Kenyatta will likely face off against longtime opposition leader Raila Odinga. Now, we've got a great panel of experts joining us in a few minutes to talk about this issue. But first, we're going to talk with Enoch Sekolia. He's a political reporter for NTV Kenya in Nairobi. Enoch, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you so very much.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. If you would, let's start at the top. 4 years ago, President Uhuru Kenyatta was new in office. He ran as a reformer, and he gave a big speech to a joint session of Kenya's parliament, and he promised honest and transparent government and a swift end to corruption. How has he accomplished that?
Now, if we want to talk about corruption, we have to go a while back last year, when the president had a State House summit to debate on the issue of corruption in the country. And actually, he admitted that his hands were tied in fighting corruption. And remember, that summit included almost everyone, or almost each and every agency that is involved in the fight against corruption. There was the Auditor General, there was the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission Chief, there was the Director of Public Prosecutions, there was the Judiciary, almost every agency.
So wait, criminal, so he had a summit and he basically said, even as president, my hands are tied, I can't do anything.
Yes, and actually, it was a blame game at State House last year. Each and every agency was trying to finger point to another. Like, for example, the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission lamented that it was doing its work, and it was now the responsibility of the DPP, that is the Director of Public Prosecutions, to carry out prosecutions of those that the evidence points that they were in one way or another involved in corruption or mismanagement of public funds. And then the DPP would blame the judiciary. So it was like...
So it sounds like there was a lot of finger-pointing going on between the different parts of the Kenyan government. But let me ask you, just sort of for the ordinary Kenyan, for a farmer or a teacher or a bus driver, how does this affect their everyday lives? Like, how do you see or feel corruption?
I remember in your global intro, you talked about a third of Kenya's budget ending up in corrupt people, in the pockets of public officials who mismanage public funds. And that is true. Remember, Kenya right now has two levels of government, the national and county government. We have the devolved system of government. But now it appears that corruption has also devolved. It's at the national and at the county level. And now this affects the ordinary Kenyan in many ways, because this money is meant to enhance the lives, or to improve the lives of Kenyans. And if they're stolen, it means that the projects that are supposed to sustain the lives of Kenyans are stalled or either collapse. I remember there is a project called the Galana Irrigation Scheme, the Kenyan Coast. The estimates is that the output, or what is coming out, let's say the harvest that the country is getting from that irrigation scheme does not match the amount of input that was put into that irrigation scheme. So it's coming out that people misappropriated funds there. The NYS project, that is the National Youth Service, it was meant to ensure that Kenyan youth are empowered. Those who don't have jobs, those, for example, who have skills, but yet yet languishing just in the villages, just in towns without jobs. But right now, 791 million shillings, that is Kenyan shillings, an equivalent of 7.91 billion shillings, was stolen by individuals.
So and it sounds like this has affected irrigation programs, it's affected jobs programs. What about if you get pulled over by a police officer for speeding, or what about if you're applying for a job in the civil service or as a teacher? Do you see or feel corruption like sort of in those engagements too?
It has now become a cartel from up to from the top government officials to even those civil servants that are supposed to ensure efficiency, that are supposed to ensure that service delivery reaches to the common Kenyan down there, the ordinary citizen. But what is happening right now? Look at it. You've mentioned about the police. For example, if you're arrested by the police, you have to part with money. But if you don't part with money, if you don't bribe the police, you will end up in the court. But in the court, you're not safe either. Because when you go to the court, there is the cartel. This cartel doesn't just begin and ends with the police. It goes to the judiciary. The former Chief Justice, that is Dr. Willy Mutunga, one time visited one of the local courts here in Nairobi. And he was so shocked that there was a court outside the courtroom. That once you reach the court, you are told, by the way, there's no need of you going through the normal procedure here. You can end up paying here, and you're let free. So it's just messed up. Bribing from the top to the low level civil servants. Well, and also, if you want service, for example, services in some of these, public service offices, you will need to bribe, but with money for you to get tenders, for you to get, for example, if you want to, just for example, you want to be given a passport, you will need to part with money.
Well, let me just ask you then, because you've done a good job detailing how this affects sort of ordinary people going through the court system, trying to get a passport. But there is also this issue of sort of corruption on a grand scale that seems to be an issue in the presidential election this year. A couple of years ago, Kenya sold what's known as a Eurobond. It basically went to international capital markets and borrowed $2 billion. Now the opposition is saying as much as half that money may have disappeared. What do we know about that?
Now, right now, it's a push and pull between the opposition. Up to this moment, as we speak, the opposition maintains that there's no tangible evidence that the money even reached the country. That a good amount of the Eurobond proceeds never reached this country. So, what the opposition has been questioning the government to come clean is to show that this amount was used in such and such project. The government, as we speak right now, has not yet clearly outlined where the money was used and which project, because it was a large sum of, let's say, the amount that was acquired through Eurobond was a lot. And according to the opposition, the amount you cannot, for example, account for the money that was acquired from the Eurobond.
Well, Enoch Sekolia, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so very much.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. We're talking today about the East African nation of Kenya. Long one of the most peaceful and prosperous countries in Africa, Kenya's prospects have been dimmed by rampant public corruption. That's shaping up as a major issue in national elections this year. Now, to talk more about this, we're going to bring in three other guests who have been following this issue closely. Joining us from London is Michaela Rong. She's a journalist and author of books including It's Our Turn to Eat, The Story of a Kenyan Whistleblower. Also joining us from Mountain House, California, is Washington Osiro. He's a Kenyan-born writer and businessman who's published a series of columns on corruption in Kenya for the Huffington Post. And in Cornwall, England, is Gabrielle Lynch. She's an associate professor of comparative politics who researches Kenya at the University of Warwick. Welcome to all of you. Michaela Rong, let me start with you. The book that you wrote, I believe it was 8, 9 years ago now, is a well-known book called It's Our Turn to Eat. It was the story of John Githongo. He's sort of a hero of the anti-corruption movement in Kenya. Remind us just briefly about what his story is and what sort of changed now 10, 12 years later.
Well, he was youngish and very idealistic anti-corruption campaigner who joined the government of Mwai Kibaki in 2003, just after the election.
I'm sorry, Michaela, we're getting just a little bit of feedback on your line. I'll come right back to you. Well, Washington Osiro, tell us, if you would, just a little bit about John Githongo's background, as well as sort of the scope of corruption scandals involving President Kenyatta himself. Has he been directly implicated?
So I met John Githongo, I think it was 2 years ago at Stanford, and I know a little bit about him. He went to St. Mary's, which is the same school President Kenyatta went to. So that's the extent of my knowledge of John Githongo. And I also read the book, It's Our Turn to Eat. To answer your question whether or not Mr. Kenyatta has been involved in grand corruption, I would say that tangentially, I think you can draw a straight line between some of the scandals that have been publicized directly to State House. So I know his sister, Nyokabi, and cousin have been implicated in the Ministry of Health scandal. So if you can say that you are a function of the friends and family that you keep, then I think one can make a compelling argument that President Kenyatta has been implicated tangentially in scandals that have been exposed.
Well, let me turn this to Gabriel Lynch then in Cornwall. Kenya does have an anti-corruption commission. How effective has that been in sort of exposing corruption or in stopping this practice?
Today, it's been very ineffective. Now and again, there are investigations into scandals and particular examples of corruption, but most of the investigations don't go very far. Information isn't handed over. And then now and again, officials step aside, but having been named, they don't seem to have been shamed, and often they're re-elected at the next election. So at the moment, Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission is rather toothless.
Well, Michaela Rong, we'll try your line again. You were talking about John Githongo. Remind us again about his story, because I do think it's perhaps has some parallels with what's occurring today.
Yeah, I mean, when he was in office, he was the anti-corruption czar for a couple of years, and he stumbled across 18 dodgy military and security contracts. And tried to get the president and the concerned ministers to stop these contracts going through. They were strange contracts that were being signed with phantom companies. He failed and ended up getting a lot of death threats and fleeing to Britain to stay with me, where he went underground for a while. Then the details of all these corruption scandals were made known. It's called the Anglo Leasing scandal, and I think what's important about it is that it involved a lot of military and security contracts. And this is a classic area of corruption. These are tenders that are not open to public scrutiny, so they're a perfect way of stealing money. I think all tendering processes in Kenya today are usually associated with major corruption. But the prime area is military and security, because they can be pushed through in the interest of national security, and nobody's allowed to look at the details. And strangely enough, you get these very, very expensive overpriced deals, and then the skimming starts. So it's a classic area in which ministers and people below them can cream off their share.
You raise that, Michaela, because there is this issue right now, which has been in the Kenyan press for about the past month, about the purchase of some, I believe it's border security aircraft from a U.S. company called L3. Tell us just a little bit about that. What's at issue there?
Well, my attention was drawn to it because John Githongo has been raising the alarm, and I think he's been talking to one of your congressmen, Ted Budd, in North Carolina, who represents a competing company. The contract for these border control aircraft, which are desperately needed in Kenya because was kind of a major problem of security with Somalia. If you remember, it was Al-Shabaab who staged that, those horrific attacks on Garissa University, on a Kenya defense unit headquarters in Somalia, and in Westgate when so many people were killed. So they desperately need this security. They desperately need this equipment, but they're getting what looks on the surface, at least, to be a very overpriced deal. And John Githongo has raised the alarm on that. I know that Ted Budd's very interested in looking more closely. And this, I think, John Githongo clearly thinks this is very familiar. We've seen these overpriced military contracts time and time again. So it looks like it could possibly be another Anglo leasing. It was approved by State Department. Clearly, the US Embassy in Nairobi should have given good advice. Perhaps they did, but it certainly seems to merit further investigation.
And this was something like a $400 million contract, and it wasn't put out to competitive bid then. It was sort of a single source contract where you just negotiate with one potential contractor.
That's right. And what we hear is that the company concerned that normally would provide this kind of aircraft could have offered the same goods at a much lower price and much faster, the same aircraft. So again, you'd need to verify these details, but this is what seems to be emerging in the first news reports.
You know, Cyril, let me turn it back to you, because as we mentioned, Kenya has been a very prosperous and peaceful nation for much of its history. But in 2007, the elections that year did turn violent. The election outcome was disputed. There were something like 1,000 people killed during ethnic violence. 600,000 people were displaced from their homes. What is sort of the legacy of that? How is that shaping what may be a contentious electoral season now?
I want to be optimistic because that's what I am. I'm an optimist. It's my hope that given the fact that Kenyans came face to face with really another Rwanda type scenario, that they are going to at least temper down the hatred that propelled the post-election violence of 07 and 08. So that is one legacy where Kenyans would definitely take a look at what happened and make sure that it doesn't happen again. The other legacy is obviously the spectre of the ICC. Obviously, Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto were exonerated.
We should just remind our listeners that both President Kenyatta and his Vice President William Ruto were investigated by the International Criminal Court for their alleged involvement in some of the violence after that election.
Correct. So given the possibility of the ICC coming back and pushing a case against any post-election violence this time around, I think the candidates are going to be much more measured and tempered in their rhetoric and in how they campaign. So those are the two legacies of 07-08 that I'm hoping will at least mitigate the extent to which potential violence happens after the elections of this year.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking today about the spread of public corruption in Kenya. We're joined by Michaela Rong, a journalist and author of the book, It's Our Turn to Eat, The Story of a Kenyan Whistleblower. We're also joined by Washington Osiro, a Kenyan-born businessman who's published a series on corruption in Kenya in the Huffington Post, and by Gabriel Lynch, a political scientist who researches Kenya at the University of Warwick in the United Kingdom. If you're interested in more Global Journalists, you can visit our website, globaljournalist.org. There you'll find more reporting of undercover international news and human rights issues. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or subscribe to the program on iTunes or YouTube. Gabriel Lynch, let me turn this back to you. We heard Washington Osiro talking about sort of the legacy of the ethnic violence from the 2007 elections. How does this have a intersection with the issue of corruption? Does that sort of shape people's views of politics in Kenya?
Yes. I think people have come to expect politicians to be corrupt. There's very high levels of public skepticism about politicians and the political class. And this then intersects with the salience of ethnic identities, where people feel that, the politicians are all the same, they're all corrupt, and therefore it's important to vote for one of your own and to make sure they get into power and to make sure, you know, a leader from the other ethnic group does not get into power, to make sure that resources trickle down to your area and to your community and that you don't get further marginalized. So I think this history of ethnic violence and tensions is very closely intertwined with corruption and the associated skepticism.
And so, in other words, then, it doesn't sound like you're terribly optimistic that even if the opposition party, the opposition alliance cord of Raila Odinga, if they win this year, that that's going to make a significant impact on corruption.
I think it's difficult to tell. Many Kenyans are very skeptical, given that with devolution, you now have 47 counties across the country. Half of these are controlled by politicians from ODM or from CORD, the opposition coalition. And these counties tend to be as corrupt as counties that are controlled by politicians from Jubilee, from the party of President Kenyatta and his deputy. So some people are very skeptical, and others will say, no, actually, the corruption that you're seeing at the moment is unprecedented, and Odinga would not be as corrupt, and he would try and tackle this and would be do so more successfully than Kenyatta has done. I think only time will tell.
Well, Michaela Rong, if I could turn it back to you, we've heard a lot about sort of petty corruption in Kenya, and then we've heard about this sort of grand scale corruption on the level of $1 billion going missing from a Eurobond sale or these large defense contracts. Is there a link between the two in some ways, between sort of the person who has to pay off a police officer or pay off someone at the passport office and someone sort of maybe at the ministerial level?
Yeah, of course there is. But can I just raise a point that was made earlier? Kenyatta and Ruto were not exonerated in that they were not tried and found not guilty by the ICC. The case collapsed, and it collapsed largely thanks to a sustained campaign of non-compliance. And, the collapse was exactly what the Kenyan government wanted. And one of the messages that has sent out to the Kenyan public is that violence, that this kind of ethnic cleansing, which many Kenyans do think that they were involved with, you can get away with it. You can do it and you can get away with it. And this is why it's a very worrying signal for the elections this time round, because a lot of people will be looking at the ICC prosecutions and what happens to them and thinking, well, these guys are leaders who had all these question marks hanging over them. They were never exonerated. This is a very worrying precedent for what could be coming up in August. To return to the point you made about the link between petty and grand corruption, of course, the two are linked, because the man lower down, the policeman who's asking for bribes at the checkpoint, will be saying to himself, well, it's okay for me to do this because this is what my boss does. And in fact, his boss will be asking for a cut and will be giving him a position on the street according to how much of a cut he gets. And so it goes all the way up to the ministries and all the way up to the very top jobs. So I think one of the problems you've always had in Kenya is the sense that the leadership itself is not squeaky clean, very, very far from it. And as long as they are seen as being deeply invested in their ethnic communities, but not in the good of the ordinary citizen, in the welfare of the nation state, that they are ethnic champions, then there's always going to be a problem lower down, because people look at their leaders and say, they're doing it, why shouldn't I?
Well, Washington Osiru, let me turn this to you, because sort of central to this question is, I think, is the problem getting worse? Now, under back in the 1980s, 1990s, Kenya was ruled by President Daniel Arap Moi. He's thought to have stolen himself personally $2 to $3 billion. So I guess my question is, are things as bad now as they were 20 or 30 years ago? Or is the situation actually better? It's just that people are still sort of disappointed about the problem.
Well, I think it was last year that none other than Mr. Moi himself said that the current government is the most corrupt government in Kenya's history. Now, that is quite an indictment for Mr. Kenyatta and Mr. Ruto. So
that's also quite self-serving. If he himself may have stolen $2 or $3 billion, he's probably still not going to admit that my government was more corrupt than them.
Yeah, but I think if you just look at the number of scandals that have been unearthed over the last 4 years and the amount of money involved, I think it's definitely gotten worse over the last 4 years, and the numbers are just staggering. So, you know, we have a swamp of folks who are who just steal, and until that mindset changes, yeah, I think the problem will continue to get worse because the economy is getting bigger, you know. So there's a bigger pool of money from which to steal, and so I just don't see that number getting smaller anytime soon. And until there's a significant change in not only the leadership but the public's anger towards the leaders, and that anger is reflected in the at the polling station and in the choices that they make, this problem is going to persist, and it's I think it's just going to get worse, and it's going to be really part of the way business is run in Kenya.
Well, Gabriel Lynch, let me ask you, you know, this has been sort of a maybe a not very positive discussion so far, but are there reasons for some hope that this is a problem that Kenya will be able to fix, that this is something that can be addressed effectively?
I suppose first, just to come back on that, the question before about whether things are getting worse, I think they are in terms of corruption. You have the return of the grand corruption scandals of the Moi era, but also with the devolution of power to 47 new county governments that came into effect with the last election, you now have the localization of corruption to these new county governments. So you have the return of the old big scandals and now this kind of proliferation of corruption down to the counties. But I don't think this means that we should be entirely pessimistic. I think there are also many positive things happening in Kenya, and one is devolution. So while it's gone hand in hand with the localization of corruption, the vast majority of Kenyans are still very supportive of devolution. They do feel that it's bringing more resources down to the local level, that it is bringing more development, more clinics, local roads. So I think that's a cause for optimism. Also, with the new constitution, some of the institutions are slowly getting stronger. So the judiciary is more independent, parliament's more independent. So I think there are reasons to be optimistic, as well as reasons for concern, especially in the run-up to the elections in August.
Well, Michaela Rong, we have just about 30 seconds left. How about you? Are you optimistic that 3 years from now the situation will have improved?
I'm very worried because it seems to me that corruption and ethnic tension in Kenya go hand in hand. And I'm alarmed at how often when I go to Kenya, I hear Kenyans talking constantly about tribe. They use that word. They're constantly, it's who belongs to whose tribe. And it's our turn to eat, the message, it's our turn to eat, which I used as the title of my book. It's all about getting into power, winning a post in government, and then ripping off the state. And I don't think that's changed since the last elections and since the violence in 2007-2008. If anything, it seems to have got worse. So I am concerned, yes.
To do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Enoch Sekolia, Michaela Rong, Washington Osiro, and Gabrielle Lynch for joining us. Our assistant producers this week are Trevor Hook, Tomas Orihuela, and Lauren Workman, with supervising producer Rachel Foster Gimbel. Elisa Blyle is our visual editor, with assistance from Hannah Sandfeld. Pat Akers is our audio engineer, and Travis McMillan is studio director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.